Welcome back to another episode of What in the World podcast, where we discuss all things past, present, and future with the sport of whirlyball. I, of course, am Steve Vogt alongside Mark Mills, a.k.a. Cramyar Slim, a.k.a. your local meat cutter.
I forgot that was going to happen. Hello.
And everyone's good friend, Mr. Noah Aaron.
How we doing?
Guys, it's a gorgeous day outside. We're doing another episode outside in Mark's backyard.
Beautiful.
And we've got new equipment yet again. We actually went on a mini road trip. At first, we went to Fred Meyer to take advantage of Mark's 15% discount. However, that did not pan out. So we ended up going to Guitar Center, where we met a very knowledgeable, helpful individual. I cannot remember his name, but we did get a business card. Yeah. And so we got some new headphones. No, you want to talk about those?
Not particularly.
All right, moving on.
It's kind of weird now.
Yeah, it feels a little bit more studio. Yeah. Hopefully, the goal is, as always, to bring you the best experience as the listener. The problem we're going after now is trying to make sure that our voice levels are a little bit pumped up and a little bit more equal with some of that music, so that hopefully, right now, you can hear us a little bit more clearly and a little bit lower volume setting on your equipment.
The problem also is that I'm going to want to use these headphones for everything.
I know, they're pretty good.
They're pretty good.
You're just going to have to abstain, man. Just self-discipline, self-control.
No, they're going everywhere.
Indulge.
Oh, yeah. So super it's more indulge. you're going to, not that you just want to.
Yeah.
You're going to.
Most likely.
Okay.
Yeah, don't hold back.
So if they fuck up later down the road, we'll know why. It's overuse.
Probably.
Outside of the podcast.
These are going to be great travel headphones.
Yeah, they will be.
Well, legit. Plus if we travel. Yeah,
when travel is allowed again out of Seattle, that'd be pretty sweet.
Oh, we're not going to take our tour van?
Yeah, we're getting enough equipment.
We might as well a tour van is the logical next step for our podcast.
Or just a U-Haul. We'll just travel a U-Haul.
Doing the West Coast tour of the podcast.
Yeah, where we go from Edmonds to Seattle.
Only costs us $20.
Yeah, that's right.
Totally worth the U-Haul.
Totally worth it.
Speaking of going out of town, I almost went out of town. Chicago had they got players together.
Is Chicago had a mini invite? Is that breaking news? Is that
breaking balls?
It might be. Aww. It might be breaking news.
Damn it. This didn't go well at all.
No, it did not.
This is where Steve edits this part out and he'll just point at us and we do the redo breaking balls.
Well, if I had figured out how to, I will say, all right, you know what? I've not touched the mixer in quite some time, and I did not anticipate having to scroll through once we hit the record button.
Gotcha.
You can still.
Are we set up now?
We are set up now.
Okay, so you want to lead us in again?
Yes. We got breaking news.
Breaking balls.
With each new segment comes hiccups, all right? That's all I can say. But if anything, the listeners are going to enjoy the effort. They're going to enjoy the brand new Breaking Balls segment, Breaking Balls News.
Wait, what happens when you say, we've got Breaking Balls?
I think I just want our podcast to be a Breaking Balls segment. Anyway, Steve.
Chicago recently got together for their first whirlyball action since the pandemic. It was approximately 10 players. And I say approximately because that's how many you need. I don't think you could do it with any less. I mean, you could, but that would be a particularly reduced and shitty gameplay. Anyways, they got together at Vernon Hills. And I reached out to a couple of individuals to see how that gameplay and that action was going. However, the two individuals that I contacted, Mr. Sean Parizader, a.k.a. Trey, and our good friend of the show, Mr. Dan Doherty of Dan Doherty Scoop Co., a superior scoop for superior player, were not there, which disappointed me highly.
So this invitational went from Vernon Hills to all the way to Naperville?
No.
I
believe it was just at the Vernon Hills Center.
So the invitational was just those in the Vernon Hills outside of Chicago area.
I guess I wouldn't even call it an invitational because nobody from out of town went and played.
Because nobody was invited.
Yeah. So initially I was invited.
It's like a local invite.
Okay.
Like a block party.
Super exclusive.
Block party. Yeah.
Block party.
Yeah.
Block party.
Block, block party. Party. Yeah. All right. I was invited initially, but then I was uninvited because, you know, they wanted to keep it local because there's still some apprehension about people from coming out of town possibly bringing the COVID with them.
Yeah, Seattle was a hot spot for, for a minute.
So Sean apparently did not go because he was preparing for a disc golf tournament.
But Sean, Trey?
Trey, yeah. Yes. And then when I asked Dan why he wasn't going, he was helping a friend lay pipe. No innuendos involved. He was literally laying pipe with a friend.
Yeah. It was probably just Call of Duty.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that's shout out Warzone. Woo! Yeah. No, I play with those guys. It's a good time.
While they're laying pipe or?
Well, that's
you play with them afterwards.
You know, well, I was thinking, actually, after I talked to him, I was like, you know, that would be a good name for when we get together, you know, just when we're online, that, you know, whole violent action, laying pipe, that might be a good term that we start using for
it. I don't think you should.
I'm not going to lie, I'm a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Are you?
Yeah. A little bit. Little,
is that,
little
is that bit. Just, it's too confusing?
No, yeah. I'm uncomfortable with how... my goodness, how do I say it? I'm uncomfortable with how aroused I'm becoming.
I am too.
Mm.
Well, this you, 6 feet's nice, though.
The only thing, we're all 6 feet away.
Just own it, man. Learn to like it. So, yeah, Chicago, good on you guys. If anyone wants to reach out to us and let us know exactly how that went, I was a little disappointed. I thought maybe someone would have gone on Facebook, done a little live shot of the individuals who happened to be there and were doing it. You know, so yeah, let us know.
You know, quite frankly, I kind of share that desire because I haven't seen Whirly Ball played recently, and I'm jonesing for it, man. I'm jonesing hard. I need my fix, and so watching another center play, I think would help.
Yeah, there's only so many of the Whirly Freak videos I'm going to watch before, like you're saying, you're jonesing for something new.
Fresh.
You know, something you're not able to anticipate because you've watched it, you know, so many times. Cleveland, we have not heard from them, although I'm sure that they're still playing. Just don't know what the frequency is. Anthony, Chili, Sully, any of the guys, Cheryl, Sean, reach out to us with any new updates. Texas continues to play, from what I hear, although it's inconsistently. According to our good friend Doc, when we talk to him on Hello Whirly Ball Nation every Wednesday, 6 p.m. Pacific time, 9 p.m. Eastern, and is it 8 p.m. Central?
It would be, yeah.
All right, yes. See, I was practicing that for a while. I kept fucking up on that when I was doing that because I don't ever think of Central Time or Eastern, really.
When you do that, do you look in the mirror?
No, I look at the wall.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't. Otherwise, I get like really self-conscious, you know, when I'm looking at myself.
Yeah. Trying to do time zones.
Exactly.
Yeah. 8 p.m. 7? 8? 8 p.m. 8 p.m.
I mean, 8 p.m. I mean, I can only tell you how many times I hit the, you know. So, and let's see, Michigan, they're going to play at some point, according to the Whirly Freak, although there's no approximate date yet. They have mentioned, though, that those Whirly Ball courts are pretty rusty, though, so it sounds like they need to get on that and get those unrusted.
Yeah.
Let's see, Minnesota, actually, even though we're not in contact with them and we're not doing anything with them, I went on their website just to, in case anyone happens to listen from the Minnesota area, they are doing Whirly Ball. I'm not sure about leagues, but at least their centers are open, but they are doing it by reservation only. So if you happen to be in the Minnesota area and want to play, just give them a call and you can set up a reservation, I'm sure. St. Louis, Dalton, you know, his center is open. They're doing open play every Monday, it sounds like. So if you're in the St. Louis area and want to play some Whirly Ball or demolition ball, as they call it out there, contact Dalton or contact the center. I'm sure you could set something up. And finally, Atlanta. No news with them, although they've been playing for quite some time. They haven't had any restrictions. So the jealousy levels are definitely spiking on my end. I wish that we had the opportunity to play like them.
And to that end, Seattle is, the center is open for reservations for open play. And we've been threatening to start leagues up again. It looks like maybe a week or two we'll have a little test run and then try and figure out how to get back into the swing of this thing.
And meanwhile, in Wisconsin, they're still hating Jeremy.
Yeah, that's what I've heard, but...
Is that what the fracas in Wisconsin has been about recently?
No, the topic of conversation when it comes to Wisconsin, from what I hear, is the fact that they do not allow you to bring your own scoops. I believe that's what it was. Is that they force you, when you come and play, you have to use a house scoop.
Now, where in Wisconsin, is it Milwaukee that has a center? But there's a Wisconsin center that Jeremy is participating in?
Is it?
I don't know.
Bloomington, or I don't know. I looked it up originally. Is Bloomington's either one of the Minnesota or it's the Wisconsin? I cannot recall. All
right.
But if we use the interwebs, I'm sure we could look up the exact location. But yeah, hopefully Jeremy's had an opportunity to go to the Wisconsin Center and play, which I would think that they have opened, because the centers in Chicago, I believe those have opened, and the Wisconsin Center actually happens to be owned by the owners of the Chicago Center. And speaking of some sad news to report, Sam Elias, the president and CEO of several of those Whirly Ball franchises in the area, has passed away. Sam was, you know, integral for, you know, did an integral part of developing the Whirly Ball Center. He actually, you know, first, I watched an interview on YouTube that he did with his son Adam about, you know, his Whirly Ball beginnings. I actually kind of, I really wish we would have been able to had an opportunity to get him on the show. Perhaps we can get Adam on at some point. But he apparently first discovered Whirly Ball in South Florida. His wife threw him a surprise 30th birthday party there, and he absolutely loved it. And so then he started doing research about how he could open up his own center. He discovered that it was pretty happening in, like, in the Michigan area, and he finally settled on Chicago, where in 1993 he opened up his first center in Lombard. And soon after, you know, he opened up several other centers. And today I believe that there are a total of 5 centers. There's the Lombard is unfortunately the first one is closed, but there's Vernon Hills, Naperville, downtown. There's one in Colorado Springs, and then there is the Wisconsin Center. If there are more, please feel free to reach out to me and correct me. That just was kind of quick initial research, but our hearts, prayers, everything go out to the Elias family. Sam was actually a Whirly Ball Hall of Famer. And a number of the Whirly Ball players at the national level, I believe Glenn Glotzhober, along with Clint Fisher, and even a lot of the owners and players knew Sam. And the Chicago's in particular players, they've, you know, reached out to that family, thanked them enough. And of course, if there's anything we can do to help honor that family and that icon of an individual in the sport of Whirly Ball, please let us know.
And it's also kind of interesting because that transition now can be interesting for the sport of Whirly Ball, because as I understand it, Sam and his company owned the vast majority of geographic franchise rights across the country. They were not in recent times supportive of competitive Whirly Ball, including, you know, leagues and nationals. It's been tough to engage with some of those centers. So perhaps, you know, we can reach out again and like you say, Steve, if there's things we can do to build those relationships with his son Adam or the you know, other representatives of the company, I think it's probably something that we should try to do.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100% on that. I would definitely like the sport to grow. Yeah. And as potentially, you know, and obviously I don't think that, you know, Adam and that organization, you know, that company is done. I think the thought process is that they do open up more centers throughout the country. And definitely, like I said, it's all about keeping open communication, good communication, and establishing and enriching that relationship. And hopefully we can get this to grow on a more national level. That's the hope and the thought.
Yeah.
And that's been your Breaking Balls.
Yeah, We'll figure that out.
Yeah, we just it'll take a little bit of tweak. But what do you guys think of the Breaking Balls music?
The Breaking Balls.
See, the thing is, we just got to make sure Steve's on the trigger at all times. So we're going to say Breaking Balls.
Yeah, I'm getting better at it. Yep.
I'm into it.
It's funny because we've had the mixer a while, but us getting together and actually doing
the
show
one other time
yeah. as a whole, right?
Yeah.
The last episode was June 22nd.
Wow.
Yeah.
Damn. And when this comes out, will be after that.
Probably.
Yeah, sometime in September, hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wake me up when September ends.
It is September, though.
So wake me up when it ends.
When it ends, yeah. It'll be October. Exactly. Shortly after this podcast comes out.
All right. I cannot believe that it's almost October, as a matter of fact.
I know it.
I think last October, we actually hung out. We went to a showing of The Room.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we totally did, yeah,
in Capitol Hill.
It was a good time.
Good times. And I definitely want to go back and do that again when things kind of get back to normalcy, right?
Yeah, when we're allowed to, go to a theater to be in that many people. Yeah, it's interesting. Doc has been saying that they just opened up theaters at quarter capacity, in that part of Texas.
That's 25% for you who are not math geniuses like myself.
Or, 0.25 or whatever.
Yeah.
Quarter pound.
Yeah, but instead of pounds, I guess it would be about a quarter of the pounds of the people.
Your local meat guy.
Yeah. Yeah, but Seattle seems a little far away from that. We're still, we never really recovered from our first spike, and we had a second spike, and we're figuring it out.
So once our center does open, the center's open.
Center's open. Center's operating at reduced capacity with a bunch of controls.
So when leagues start happening again, which hopefully is going to be sooner rather than later, my understanding is that there are a number of individuals in contact with Mr. Elke regarding that.
Yeah, sounds like we'll have a test run to make sure we've got sufficient protocols in place in the next week or two. And then hopefully that proves, sufficient, and then we grow into something a little bit more normal. It'll still be no congregating inside. We'll get the airflow with no recirculation. We'll have masks on the whole time. We'll see if it works. We'll see if it works, and if we can keep everybody safe, and then we'll keep going.
Well, my question is how is that going to work come fall or the winter time? It's going to get a lot more cold, rainy, wet.
The face mask won't be as hot. It'll actually be kind of soothing when you're out there.
Yeah, we'll see.
Especially if you let it get moist before you go in.
Yeah.
Gross. That's kind of why I'm looking forward to trying it out and getting started as quick as we can.
The thing that I've been thinking about is the way we're going to communicate will be different. Will somehow beneficial in the future
it's all in the eyebrows now.
Yeah. And like finger motions. It's almost going to be like baseball calls.
Yeah.
Where you just do a slide of the arm.
That's right.
But so a person like me, my voice is pretty low and I mumble a lot when I talk and yell and whatever. So with the mask, I don't know if anyone's going to
be a little muffled. Yeah.
You just got to figure out different ways, and it's going to be a better communication with your team and getting to know your team and know when the passes are going to be coming in and shots and stuff. And I think that will be beneficial coming into nationals and building that type of
silent communication.
Exactly. And just kind of getting to know the people you're playing with better. I don't know.
It forces you to play a more advanced game of whirly ball because the A players, the unlimited players, very low verbal communication.
Yeah.
So it's just, everyone's just going to have to get to know each other better and kind of
learn tendencies.
Exactly.
The chemistry.
Yeah, I think it'll be an easier transition for the more advanced players because of that.
Yeah, they already do that.
Yeah, right.
And then, of course, you wonder how many players are going to want to opt to wear masks and actually do that. Obviously, there's no choice in the matter. The requirement will be you wear a mask if you want to play, but I'm interested to see.
Yeah, and on both sides of the spectrum, right? There may be people abstaining on both sides. One, because they don't want to engage in the some of the protocol changes, and then others may not want to participate because the risk is too high for them personally. I think we'll get people abstaining on both ends.
Yeah, and I don't have a problem with either way. It's totally fine. We're just
I think that the key is we'll, you know, just clearly communicate and let people make the choice. And hopefully, personally, you know, we'll be able to play whirly ball and keep everybody safe. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Just getting back in the game.
Dunking on some fools. It's just going to be super weird to get back in the car and, and work it. And work it real good. Yeah, we're going to see how many people rock the vote, right?
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a lot. Yeah, I remember, you know, before this happened, you know, I had some electrical schematics. I was working on some projects that I was hoping to get into for, you know, preparing for Michigan Nationals so that we in Seattle could have something like a Michigan car. But, man, that has been totally derailed by all this. So I'm just now it's like, can I pass the ball? Can I lob it to someone? Can I get, I mean, like you're saying, can I hit the backboard?
I believe in you.
I think it'll take a couple of weeks, then we'll be back in.
I think we have a little bit of an edge over the average player who has not been to the center because we've been able to come over to Mark's where he does have, you know, his backboard set up, and he has a pretty large yard, so we're able to, you know, pass the ball around and still be comfortable with, you know, accurate passes and catching the ball. So,
and you know, it's like riding a bike. You know, I think like we were talking about before, like if we like really got serious about this and we're at Mark's backyard, you know, practicing, you know, every day for a couple of weeks leading up to this, I think we would have an advantage for approximately 1 week.
Yeah, I'll say like I'll come out here and practice pretty frequently, and every once in a while, like my arm will just kind of get like a little sore if I don't move for like a few days, like if I just like skip a week or something. Mm-hmm. And then that's just something that I just skip a week of just not doing it. Whereas how many people have not like been practicing, like even passing or something?
Right.
Ball? Like after their first game back, like their arm's going to be sore.
I mean, Elke talks about how he's gone down to the center a couple times to, you know, to shoot at the practice wall. And, you know, his shot comes back to him after, you know, pretty quick. But his stamina's gone.
Yeah, and that's another thing is when we get back to the center, we won't be able to use that practice wall.
Yeah.
We're going to just have to go in, like, cold just start playing.
Oh, really? You can't?
Nope. No congregating inside is going to be one of the...
And especially with those practice walls, because how many people would be standing right next to each other and just trying to use it?
We'll go outside and we'll pass in the parking lot or something.
Or we could...
Just come here first.
We could... I was going to say, maybe we could actually build, like, a portable practice board.
Yeah.
Where we, you know, have it outside or, you know, in the covered area, we bring it out, has, like, padding on it, and we just, you know.
Fireballs at Aurora.
Exactly.
Right. Hit that random smoke shop.
Yeah. No, I like that idea. That's something that we could totally, if someone has a truck that we can borrow to.
B. White? Doesn't B. White drive a truck?
Oh, yeah.
It's Yeah. There we go. And Peters.
Yeah, Peters is a truck.
All right.
Secrets. I don't think it's a secret
that
Brad has a truck.
Well, not anymore.
All right, so moving on to some topics.
Topics. I like topics.
All right.
So one discussion I wanted to get into was something that we touched on briefly in Hello Whirly Ball Nation, and that was the discussion of
Hello, Whirly Ball Nation, Gus's podcast, or Gus's YouTube stream, is Zoom call.
Yes, every Wednesday, like I alluded to, and I know my...
And 8 p.m. Central.
Yeah. I'm going to remember that for the rest of my life.
Hopefully he doesn't change it.
Yeah. God, I hope those are my last words. 8 p.m. Central.
I don't know about the mountain time zone.
Yeah. Just don't bring a mirror in. Was the idea that if you are not cheating enough.
If you're not winning.
If you're not.
Wait, that wasn't the topic in that one. That was.
Well, we've touched on several topics.
Topics.
Yeah. And the one that I wanted to discuss first was. Well, no, you word it better than I do, so.
Yeah, the idea of the game, you know, a couple of different ideas or conceptions of competition, and one of the ones that we occasionally run into in whirly ball and other sports is the idea that if you're not winning, you're not cheating hard enough.
Exactly.
And, you know, you start to see that with, You know, teams trying to get a little bit of an edge, right? Trying to maybe you jump up in the seat a little bit more. Maybe you, you know, start hacking players a little bit more. Maybe, you know.
So you
try and find any edge. And if you're losing, that means you haven't found an effective edge yet. So keep pushing it.
So we were kind of having this conversation before we started recording. And what I was going to allude to is I want to come off the court. And if my team won a game, like, there's not going to be another player that looks at me and is like, yeah, you won,
but
you also extended a little bit, or right. you like you did this type of thing. And so one of the things that I was also saying is like, I'm a littler guy. So if I get a block, I do the blocking based off like what my body's capable of doing. And I make sure I don't extend at all. Like I've never been called for extension. Like I don't try to extend. Like I don't go out there and do that. I don't wear black shorts to look like I'm part of the seat or anything like that. Like, I want that. So, like, when I do block someone, that's me. That's me as, like, a literally guy that's, like, doing that. It's a proud thing type of.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm not trying to take advantage of all the other type of things about that. Or, I don't want to come off the court and, like, I made the winning block. And then, like, I come off the court and they're like, well, yeah, but your half your ass was off the seat, like type of situation.
Half your ass off the seat is okay.
I'm all your ass. My cheeks were off the seat.
Cheeks off the seat.
And that's just a thing that's the style of play I want to do. Like, yeah. We've lost a Nationals game because of a penalty of mine, and that's something I live up to. Like, I did it.
Yeah.
And it's not like something I ever hid. Like, as soon as I got off the court, like, I was fucking, like, miserable about it. Like, I went and I sobbed, and yeah, it just sucked. It happened. But I wasn't trying to do it to, like, better our game or anything. It was just something that happened, and it sucked.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm never trying to get past the rules and hope that the ref doesn't see it.
Right.
Yeah, because, you know, there are the rules, and you try to follow the rules. And, like, and there are people that know of the rules and make the rules, but they also turn a blind eye to those rules just because it's an advantage.
Right.
And so, I don't know. I think it's a good conversation of, like, how do you guys feel about that as well?
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, I absolutely would prefer to win the right way, right? That leave no questions. For me, I also try and put 100% of myself into everything. So, or on the court, right? I'm trying to do everything to, you know, at least 100% of my capability. So I will, you know, I'll there have been times where I'll jump off the seat, and it's not because I want to extend, it's because I want to get that block, and I should get called for that. If I get off my seat, I should get called for extension. And, you know, Tony on court one has been really good. He's made me a better player because, you know, when I first showed up on court one, you know, he's calling me every week three times a game. And I'm like, this is the technique that I've used. I didn't think anything was wrong with this. And then, you know, I'd go watch video, or, you know, I kind of feel like, you know what? Yeah, I wasn't getting called for this before, but Tony's right. I mean, my cheeks left the seat. So find a better technique, right? Do it the right way. And I think that's the right way to do it. I think it makes me a better whirlyball player. And it also, like you say, Mark, right, when I come off the court, I do not want to have the reputation of the guy that cheats or the guy that's looking for any edge. I want the reputation of the guy that tries 100% and gives it his all, but not the one that goes over that line.
So my question is, in your guys' opinion, but do you think that there are those who do try and get away with?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
And I've actually been coached, you know, you know, if you're not, you know, I've had other people coach me, like, if you're not winning, you're not cheating hard enough. And you see it from, you know, in my mind, other centers, you know, different centers have different personalities when it comes to that. And I think some centers, they practice on ways to, you know, all right, here's how you can do extension without it looking like extension. And, you know, I remember Jimmy even told me, like, for shorter players, he would talk about little techniquey things that you could do that kind of bent the rules.
Wearing the black shorts.
Wearing the black shorts was a thing that Jimmy told me. You know, looking for any edge. And it's an arms race, right? And it's an arms race that's not good for the sport. Because if I extend a little bit, then you extend a little bit more. And then I extend a little bit more, and now we're standing up in a car.
Yeah, exactly. So the conversation kind of started because we were talking about a player where, a person that would go against these rules and, you know, they extended a little bit. And, like, So as I saw them, they're just like a person who was just, I just didn't appreciate their game on the court. If it wasn't for Gus's zooming and stuff and like talking to him, and like, I don't think I would have ever liked this person, but like getting to know him through the like zooming and stuff, like they're just an awesome person. But I had never taken the time to talk to him off the court or anything because I was like, no, like, fuck this dude.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that, and that to me, that extends to, you know, like for me personally, it's actually tough to get to know some of the Texas players in particular.
Or any of the out-of-state players.
Any of the out-of-state players, but Texas at the Nationals tournament, you know, the Texas players will generally keep to themselves to a greater extent. And there are exceptions, like, you know, a lot of the Montgomerys, you know, Josh Montgomery has been great about, you know, I've really enjoyed getting to know him, and a few others that they're more approachable. But in that, you know, even if we as Seattle, I've noticed us do it. Like when we go to some place we'll stay really tight with our D teams and we'll kind of surround them and it'll just be like Seattle and there's no intermixing. And then the only way you interact with people is when you meet them on the court. And when you're on the court, you're combatants,
it's the worst side
in the sport. It's appropriate to be, you know, aggressive and vicious and, you know, trash talking and stuff. And it's really important to have those social interactions off the court that are really important to build those relationships. And, yeah, maybe I shouldn't pick on Texas. But
everyone picks on Texas. So.
Yeah, and I have noticed personally, it's a little tough because, you know, at tournaments, they kind of, you know, they group up together and they've got the hive mind going and they're in competition mode in and around the center and everything.
Does that segregation upset you? Do you feel like that style, that philosophy, that state of mind needs to change?
You know,
would it be beneficial for the community, or does it help the competitive juices?
Yeah, that's really
it's the competitive juices.
It's really interesting, Steve. That's a great point. You know, I think back to, you know, where do you find the balance in it? And I think it's totally appropriate and totally okay for teams to do that, to support their teams, to keep the competitive juices high, to try and do really well at Nationals. I think that's totally okay to do that. And one of the pieces of balance that I come back to is the last time that Texas hosted Nationals, you know, I've said it before, were guys, Brad Reading and Chris Bolte and, you know, some of those guys who at the center, you know, they are, you know, they're aggressive, you know, personalities. They're, you know, these are the guys that are competitors. But at the same time, they were really gracious hosts, and they took us around. And once we got away from the center and hanging out away from the center, we got to know them, and they were cool guys. And I really appreciated that. So to your point, it's probably an unfair ask to say when you're at the center, it's time for social interaction. No, it's Nationals, right? We're there to compete. We're there to win and do what you got to do, I guess. But it there is some balance there.
I almost appreciate that, though, because to me, I always find, to me, Texas is kind of like my personal rival because
they're like
they
Cobra
have that
Kai.
Distance. Exactly. Ooh. They're the ones you love to hate, at
the
least
John
for me.
Kreese
exactly.
Cobra Kai.
Exactly. And for those of you who have not watched Cobra Kai, the series, make sure you do. It's on Netflix now. It's absolutely great.
This episode is sponsored by...
That would be great. Yeah, we have absolutely no sponsorship from those guys. But it's a good show.
Yeah,
the John Kreese Cobra Kai, the bad Cobra Kai.
Yes. But yes, I definitely appreciate that, and I enjoy that to an extent because, like you said, when you're outside the center, you do find that social interaction, getting to know people. But to Mark's point, the Zoom, YouTube Live, Whirly Ball Nation has allowed us the opportunity to get to know some of these individuals whom you may have a dislike for up until, like you said, you get to know them on a personal level.
Yeah, it just kind of takes you out of the game for a minute. And, like, it's the one positive thing about not being able to play Whirly Ball is that Gus started this whole thing. And so we get to talk to people outside of the centers, which when I'm looking back at it, I'm kind of annoyed at myself that I haven't gone around and talked to these people more. And sometimes just stay within a certain social circle.
Yeah.
But that's kind of your personality, though. I mean, how dare you? But do you see yourself breaking out of that shell?
No, and so I wouldn't have done it otherwise because I guess you don't get that opportunity to talk to the people as much. And so I'm kind of grateful for what's been going on because I have been able to talk to people at a different level. And so when it comes to the next Nationals or invite or something, I'm going to go and talk to these people. And, like, I will be able to have a conversation and like and be okay talking to them, not just thinking of them as just competition, but like actual friends or something.
Yeah, like and not, and I mean specific, I mean for me, I haven't participated in a lot of them. But you know, like getting to know Bill from Chicago
right?
a bit more has been fantastic. I'll have no problem, you know, next time I see him, you know, it's yeah, I built a lot of respect and camaraderie with him for sure. Yeah.
Like and
not,
even
not
like,
so much Timmy from Michigan. No, though. I mean, but, I still can't wait to block the shit out of that guy.
But even like Ben, I don't think I would find my way out of talking to Ben that often. But he's frequently on the meetings.
Oh, Glass
like,
yeah,
yeah, and he's just a down to earth, like total dude. Where like the next time I see him, I want to buy him a beer and just that's have right, a conversation. Yeah. And that wouldn't happen otherwise.
Yeah,
because there would just always be that competition factor, and right. it just comes down to wins and losses. And
and Ben's also, you know, he's in the upper echelon, exactly. old guard, Michigan royalty. You know, yeah. You know, why would I?
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm loving what's going on, and I'm hoping maybe when things go back to normal that it stays, and people just want to frequently talk to each other once a week type of situation. Yeah. But we'll see how that goes.
I will also say I like giving Timmy shit because
yeah, Timmy likes to take the shit, and yeah. he likes to like
it. I think
he likes to turn the burner from medium to high.
but I will also say, you know, I have a couple of conversations in the Zoom calls. If we were in the money tournament and he was on my team, like.
You'd be like the offensive lineman that just yeah, like
I would
step aside and let them sack the quarterback.
No. I would set a screen for him.
Okay.
You know, so hard so that we could dominate. Like it would be fun. It, you know.
All right.
I can see that there is something in Timmy worth redeeming.
Yes. I mean, you got to be okay with a guy that has that type of passion for the game and also believes in himself that much.
Yeah, I mean, I can't wait for, you know, I hope everybody stays healthy and we can figure out a way for him to resolve the James Gill bet.
And what's the James Gill bet?
Oh, he's going to do a one-on-one versus James Gill.
First to 20 points. I think it's for the first 10, the loser gets the ball.
Yep.
And after 10 points, you make it, you take it.
And it's only half court.
It's half-court rules, and it's just one-on-one.
And I think that it's just almost building to the fact that, like, and Timmy, it's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
And there's going to be an audience just because he's yeah. kind of building it that way.
Yeah, and, you know, I think James is into it.
I think he is, too.
I think it might happen. I hope James stays healthy and can bring in a standard James Gill performance and provide a little education here. But, you know, it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of fun, no matter what happens.
It sounds like a workshop that I need to attend.
Yeah, it really does.
So kind of on the same topic.
Because what I think Timmy doesn't get is that James is a really good defender. I don't think that part yeah. is really clear.
Yeah, he's known as a shooter, but he's, I mean, he could defend.
Don't get it wrong. Don't sleep on James.
And just really quick, you guys had shared your opinion regarding the, you know, if you're not
winning,
you're not cheating enough.
Oh, yeah, we moved fast.
We did.
Yeah, I don't know yeah, how we started talking immediately yeah. about Texas after that. I don't know how that happened.
You know, it's just we go with the flow. That's yeah. kind of what happens sometimes. But just really quick, I tend to agree with you guys. I may have said it before. I'll say it again. I have literally only extended intentionally once in my life. And that was against Eric LaPlante, league game. I was just pissed off at the way I was playing. Nothing was going my way. So I literally just got off my seat. I wasn't even trying to hide it. Totally got called. I swatted him, but I swatted the ball right back into his scoop, and he scored over me.
Four-point play,
yeah. Which...
Perfect.
So I'm telling you, if you're gonna cheat, make sure you swat the ball away from the offensive player. Yeah.
Yeah. Top tip. You know, to me that's another big portion of it is if you're playing at a center where the referee calls that is an important part of the game. If you're playing at a center where that doesn't get called, then there's a different incentive structure, right? And that the idea of what whirly ball is changes based on the way the referee calls it. And I've said that before a lot. And the way that Seattle, you know, what is the line for Seattle? What's cheating and what's not? It's the way Tony sees the game. And Tony sees it all.
So does trying to get away with an occasional extension, What else would be an example of something you're trying to get away with?
I would say aggressive, overly aggressive defense, like, you know.
Slashing,
yeah. You know, I'm pressing on the elbow, yeah. I'm grabbing this guy's car a little bit. You know, whatever, you know, I'll admit.
Keys, when, like, you're holding defense and you're, like, yelling key, right. Like the offensive player's in the key, but they're not, and then you know,
yeah,
like,
or counting down the wrong clock.
Yeah, that's actually fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's so I don't. The line is.
Yeah, if you take that all out and you try and be the most ethical and moral player out there, nobody's doing that. Does it take away from the spirit of sports in general? Because I think we can agree that in any sport, there's.
You're looking for the edge.
You're looking for the edge. Oh,
always.
You know,
you're
see
always
what you can get away right. with.
But yeah. I mean, couldn't you just do that with trying to get in the other team's head with just trash talk?
Trash
talking doesn't necessarily mean that you're.
Well, I think there's a line in everything.
Oh yeah,
right?
I mean, like, and you don't say that. Like certain things.
Yeah, you don't have to be derogatory.
Yeah.
Or anything,
well, I mean, you can be pretty derogatory, but you may be bringing up like. Personal medical history of spouses or something. Like,
there's a line.
All right, maybe.
I'd be like, man, you did your research. You pay attention to me a lot.
Yeah. So I think in anything, there's a line. And on some level, there's a rule book, and it's supposed to codify where that line is.
Yeah.
So you should go right up against that line. I am for right up against that line. And then crossing it, you should try not to cross it. You should
try. I mean, if you're crossing that line, you're just a dick. I mean,
if you're intentionally doing it repeatedly, yeah. And that's your games, that's your strategy. I don't want to be that kind of player.
And you don't want that type of person playing at all.
I
look at it that there's always going to be those players and. There's nothing, you know, there's no way you can change their own personal morality, their mindset. They're going to try and get the edge, like Noah said. And so if you're not going to change that, then do everything you can to overcome that. Now, whether that means you're going to become that kind of player or just, you know, like you said, do everything on the level, I guess that just comes down to each individual player, right?
The key is that it doesn't turn into an arms race, that it doesn't turn into, well, he's doing it, and so everybody's doing it, so then I got to do it. And then as long as it doesn't go to that territory, I would prefer to have a really competitive person on my team. And if they're, you know, systematically testing the rules for weaknesses, like I see what you're saying, Steve. Like that's part of competition, right? For me, like, I still don't really know what a ram is because we don't call rams in Seattle. And I remember I was playing against Cleveland in Texas, whatever nationals that was. And, you know, Anthony's coming up the baseline, and I'm switching off with the goalie and coming back, and he's looking to shoot. And we kind of hit nose to nose, and we hit pretty hard. And where I grew up in Seattle, nose to nose, like if... You know, if everybody's driving forward, nose to nose is not a ram. Ram is only square in the back if someone's not moving.
Particularly if you're both going at the same speed.
We're both going at the same speed, and it was a pretty high rate of speed. But Anthony was, like, looking up to shoot, and so I don't know if he saw me 100% coming. And we hit hard, and he might have gotten some steering column in the chest. I mean, he took a pretty hard hit. And he was saying, that's a ram. And he looked up at the Texas ref, that's a ram. You got to call that. It's a ram. Now, I didn't think it was a ram because that's not how we call rams in Seattle. It may have been a ram in Cleveland. It certainly wasn't a ram in Texas. But I guess I don't know what my point is other than the one I typically go back to, which is the referee defines the game.
Yeah.
Well, we should work towards having a more unilateral rule set across the board.
Yeah, unified. Yeah. Unified one. But I guess to the point that you were making just previously, I want someone competitive like that. You know, I'm my team. I want someone who is, you know, like, I'm going to go full speed. And if I break a rule, you tell me where the rule is. You know, I'm going to go till you call it. I don't know that you can fault a player for doing that.
And my final thought on that is if I know, like I said, that there's going to be those kind of players. And so while I won't personally, you know, stoop to that level, so to speak, I'm not going to get all up in arms and upset about it unless the only time it absolutely bugs and bothers me is if like Mark had alluded to early, if it is a final play, if it's, you know, you have someone dead to rights, you're going to score, or, you do something legitimate, and then their illegitimacy capitalizes for their team.
Right, and the ref doesn't call it.
And the ref doesn't call it, exactly. That's where it's like, okay, this is total BS. But then I realize that's sports.
That's sports,
that happens.
Right.
You know, refs are going to miss something. They're not going to call it because it's iffy.
Yeah. I remember being on a soccer team, and, you know, I was a defender, and the goalkeeper would come up to me and be like, that guy with you, you know, he was putting some moves on you. Why don't you just, you know, throw him to the ground? I was like, oh, because I was in the penalty box. That'd be a penalty. He's like, yeah, but I was out of position. So he's going to score that goal. So he's got a clear goal scoring chance. You throw him to the ground and he gets a PK. Then we have a chance at blocking it. You know, you're going for, like, oh, wait a minute. So that's there's a strategic element of intentionally, you know, fouling somebody. You know,
unfortunately, though, with our sport, with the penalty, there's points per penalty.
That's right.
So.
And quite
most often.
Yeah.
There are a couple.
There's a couple, like, but.
Quite frankly, if a team is playing flawless and they're, you know, they're really correct in all of their positionings, where they go, their defense is on par, on point, then you won't ever have to find yourself in a position to do that, I would say, right? It's the only time I think players try and get away with extensions and other things is when they are out of position and they're not doing something right. And a seasoned referee can probably take note of that and identify that, which kind of leads back to a discussion that we've had previously about
how do we get seasoned referees?
Referees for national tournaments. Right. We really need to be a bit more selective on that in the future.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah, so perhaps to that end, you know, we it seems like there are a number of things that the national committee could focus on, and I'm still interested. You know, it seems like there's no end of opportunity. There's the sporting aspect of the sport, right? The rules, the referees, the, you know, all that. There's the business aspect to it. Like, all right, so if we want to figure out how to keep centers alive and what we as players can do to keep centers alive, there's that kind of part. There's the Nationals planning part of it, which is, let's say we want to go have a Nationals in Minnesota at some point. Or Chicago, where, you know, they're not really receptive to hosting Nationals. Is there a way that we can, you know, offload it, right? Have the Nationals committee take dues, and then the National committee works directly with the center. You know, and it almost seems like there are these subdivisions or subcommittees that could do a lot of good for the sport. I look forward to hearing anything from the Nationals committee.
I mean, I do too, because we haven't heard from them in, year.
Well, you know, there's been certain things going on preventing them from focusing 100% on whirly ball.
Step one is probably the return to Nationals and Invitationals, plan.
Which I'm really hoping that there is a invite prior to Nationals, either I highly doubt it'll be before the end of 2020, but it would be nice if it was. I foresee if they do, it'll probably be like March 2021.
Yeah, normally it's around March. So,
but maybe we can reach out to Snowy from Texas and see if he has any thoughts on that. Be interesting.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, I think so much is still up in the air about when we think it'll be appropriate for 100 people from around the country to gather in one spot and then go back. When the national guidance is good for that.
I really think it's going to depend on when the vaccine is developed, when it's mass released, and when it's more importantly, it's proven that it is an effective vaccine.
Yeah, that'll certainly help. That'll certainly help. I mean, there seems like there are two ways out of this thing, and heading towards vaccine-based herd immunity is one of them. Although we'll see. We'll see if it's effective. We'll see if people trust it. We'll see how it goes.
And if we don't have Nationals, we could always do some sort of fantasy whirly ball, you know, where we draft individual players and, right?
Yeah.
Would that be fun?
How would that work?
Yeah, there would have to be groups of different leagues because there's only so many players.
How would a fantasy, because in my mind, I understand fantasy whirly ball to be if we're all playing, then you keep track of statistics, and then you could do some point gathering. You know, how many points did all these players have plus you know, pick a team for defense and how many points they let up or something.
So you necessarily wouldn't have to commit to playing, because if there's players out there who, you know, necessarily, well, I don't know if I'm playing Nationals 2021, but let's just, you know, we could take anybody who has played as long as we know their style of play, their game, you know, whether they're more of a defender, if they're more offense, or if they're well balanced, you could just throw them into a mix and then just go from there, just like make a draft to do something from that point.
Well, you can make like all points type of things where it's even like rebounds, blocks.
Yeah, I mean, so step one would have to take figure out how to do statistics, but then so again, if I'm, let's say we're playing on a team together, right? Okay. And we're trying to do fantasy calculations. It makes sense. All right, you take all the statistics from the way I'm playing. Mm-hmm. And then how would someone who's not playing factor?
There would have to be someone else that would have to keep track and just upload all the stats.
Yeah, that would be how you get those of us that are playing, right? Yeah. Someone has Mark on
So there would be
team,
like a group of people that would draft certain people. Have to be a draft.
I'm with you, but Steve was just talking about including players who are not playing on the fantasy team.
Yeah, I was thinking of more of like if we somehow did some sort of simulation where it was known that the actual tournament's not going to happen. Yeah.
Oh, and
like what Jeremy had done. Yeah. You know, we could do either one. It definitely would be a lot more entertaining and fun if there was a tournament happening.
Yeah.
Or if we're not talking tournament, if we're talking leagues. Which I've brought up before, like if Seattle has their leagues, if other people across the country wanted to participate, if we threw out there on the Facebooks or wherever or the podcast said, hey, we have this idea where we're going to throw out a list of players who's playing in this particular, either intermediate, advanced, and you choose your players, and then we'll let you know, we'll keep track of certain statistics.
It's almost something like we could have, you know, a standardized game that's like, okay, we want you to take four shots from midcourt, from the center of the court. Okay, how many of those did you hit? Okay, you hit two of four. Okay, great. And then we want you to take, you know, four shots from the top of the key. Okay, how many did you hit? Okay, you hit four of four. Okay. And then we want you to take four layups. How many of those did you hit? Okay, great. And then, all right, so then from that we can say, all right, you as a player, you're worth, you know, a score of 15, whatever that is, 15 out of 30.
I kind of agree with that.
And then,
but I kind of don't, because you're not in game situations. Right. That's not really like a testament to how you're going to react mid-game,
right.
You know, because anybody relaxed can probably hit the majority of those shots, right? I mean, not everybody, but the majority of players.
Mark's never relaxed.
It's true. But it would be one of those things where it would also be helpful if the center had like a live feed. For the games,
yeah,
where
right.
We can watch it and stuff. I don't know. The thing about that is also, like, everyone knows of players based on Nationals and stuff, but there's also really good players that don't travel.
That's true. Yeah, I've heard of a bunch of them in Cleveland especially, yeah.
And so, you know, you got those dark horses where you're like, I'm going to draft that guy. You know, he's the
nobody
one.
Knows
they're a free agent.
Yeah. And no one knows necessarily who they are because they don't travel, but they're really good volleyball
players. And just really quick, I just thought of a scenario a few years ago when we had it Nationals in Texas. There had to be a change-up in a team member, right? Because I believe it was Nan had to leave, and so all of a sudden they had to bring in Joe Tiffany from Seattle to come and play, right?
Oh,
so
they just had
that's
to.
Yeah, well,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
What they did. You know,
they flew in Joe Tiffany.
Yeah, I mean, he cleared waivers. He, he passed his physical. Yeah, exactly. You know, he did everything he needed to do to come and play on the team. So, obviously, we don't have all of the answers, you know, but just the idea, the thought of doing some sort of whirlyball fantasy league tournament, whatever you want to call it, is definitely appealing. I would totally be down in the looking into it.
It would be cool to be able to take a Seattle team playing against other Seattle teams and gather some stats and be able to compare those to a Michigan team playing against other Michigan teams and a Cleveland team playing against other Cleveland teams and try and figure out how to have a competition across centers while not actually playing across centers.
Well, like, Doc's been watching Nationals from 2019, and he's been doing the stats on those for a lot of the games, and it's pretty interesting what he's coming up because, like, you know.
Is he just doing shots or is he doing blocks as well?
I believe just shots.
Just shots.
So that's another thing, is he'd be able to, like, count blocks as well, well and, you know.
Or,
and that's the thing with, like, that's fantasy. Awesome that's the thing that. With fantasy is you can make blocks, say, if someone gets a block, that's 3 points for you because they got a block. Because it's very rare.
You know, in my and one of the one of the stats I'm interested in as a defender is also not just blocks, but shooters that miss when they shoot over me. But that's a deeper level.
Because that technically can be seen as a can be seen as a defensive play.
Sure.
To a degree.
And I'm interested in seeing, you know, is my defense effective, right? Am I, like, when I think, for instance, when I'm guarding Barrett, and there are some times where I think I do a really excellent job and I get him down to 50%, or I get him down to maybe 20% on my best days. And there are other days where I think, yeah, he's probably hitting 80% of these over me.
Another interesting thing that you could do would be, because obviously you know that there's certain... there are players who have certain strengths and certain weaknesses, right? So let's say, obviously, me being a shorter player and not the best car driver, my defensive skills are not as great as, let's say, as Mark's and yours, Noah, right? So let's say that I do, once in a blue moon, I'm able to block someone. I'm able to deflect a pass or something. And maybe this is fair, not fair, the discussion could be had, but let's say that I get more points for doing that than, like, let's say that Barrett would, because Barrett can block fucking anybody and everybody, right? And let's say that Doc from Texas, I know we keep bringing him up, but he's a good guy, as we know now. Let's say he scores a 3-pointer, right?
Yeah.
So then he gets more points than, let's say, James Gill would get for scoring a 3, because he's the probability, you know, the statistically of him doing that is a lot less than it would be for James.
So it's one of those type of things of how you have to draft your team, because say if, let's just say that blocks are 5 points.
Sure.
And each individual shot is 1 point.
Yeah.
So if you draft like a higher person that's destined to get more blocks, you know, you're hoping for that. But since, say, I drafted you, Steve, because you're a good shooter, so I'm like, okay, I drafted a shooter. But when you do get a block, that's 5 points plus, like, the 10 points that you made during the game as well. So it's got to be, like, a counterbalance type thing. Do you just always draft offensive players where they won't necessarily get blocks? Because if you
handicap them perfectly, then everyone scores the same number of points every game.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's sort of like you create a league where, say, your quarterback threw an interception and then the wide receiver got a tackle. Like, he doesn't normally tackle, but he got a tackle, so he can get individual defensive points because of that. It's kind of a similar situation where, like, you're hoping to get more points off the wide receiver, but he just happened to do a defensive thing, and that's extra points for
him. Are you saying that's a good thing then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, you would just, like, kind of draft, like, that type of situation where, you know, you'd probably still want, like, three good shooters, maybe four good shooters, but you also still want a good defensive player that will get those block shots. Or even, say, somehow you set the stats to teams reach a certain point of offense. So if, say, the balance of offense is 30 points and another team holds them to, like, 20, then that's still more points for your defense. So you get more points based on that as well. For holding point percentage.
Like I said, we could throw out so many ideas. There's a lot involved.
I'm going to need to get some spreadsheets going. But it all comes down to, you know, how do we get stats?
Yeah.
And that the stat tracking is all that. So kudos to Doc for going through 2019. And
well, maybe if there's anybody out there who is an app developer, they, you know, if we had some sort of correspondence with them, we could, you know, help develop something specifically for Whirly Ball.
I am sure.
Even up in Seattle, like, you know, we have an extra spot up in the refs booth where someone can just keep stats. And
I think that there are a number of, you know, pretty good either soccer or basketball apps where you just, you know, touch the screen, put in the players, and just doot-doot-doot would probably work.
But we need to balance it out, because we don't want to put in a ton of statistics and things that, you know, a person has to keep track of, right?
We're putting a dedicated person up there with an app. What else are they going to do?
I mean, are they going to be overwhelmed, though?
Get them like $5.
I mean, how many things are they going to, well, how many depends individual on, statistics are they going to have to keep?
Depends,
you know,
on
track?
How good the interface is.
Yeah.
If it's just a spreadsheet, yeah, I tend to agree with you. You know, I was taking stats in some of our warm-up to Nationals games. I was taking stats on the window of shots, misses, but I wasn't doing like, and I was trying to, I think I could have probably also kept track of where you were taking the shot. You know, left side, center, right, how many welds out. Yeah. And I feel like I could have thrown that into the equation pretty easily. But it depends on what else we're looking at. If we're looking at, like, who's taking the shot, where they're taking the shot from, who they're taking the shot over, who gets the rebound, how many passes somebody drops. Like, it starts, if I'm just doing it with a spreadsheet or a pencil, it starts adding up too quick. But easily, how many shots somebody takes and how many makes versus how many misses. That's you know, a good place to start.
I just know that at least I'll get drafted once by myself.
No, we would get drafted top tier if it's like Tuesday night, who's partaking, because, you know, they know us and, you know, they're like, oh, yeah, those are good guys.
Yeah.
We'll draft them.
Little
do they know. We're not the creme de la creme of players.
Oh, these guys have the podcast. That means they're the best. That is not how that works.
We're the best Whirly Ball podcast,
but we're
not the best players.
Yeah.
That was another random discussion. So, you know how Hall of Famers are based off of players and stuff, but do you think we'd be inducted into the Hall of Fame for being the first Whirly Ball podcast?
It is up to the members of the Hall of Fame to decide whether
our contributions are Hall of Fame worthy enough.
There are non-players in the Hall of Fame, or players in the Hall of Fame, they probably played.
Are you guys listening?
But the reason they're in the Hall of Fame is not due to their play. It's due to their contribution to the sport.
But I want to know, are we a first ballot Hall of Fame?
No.
No.
Well, you know, first ballot's interesting because
what is first ballot?
I was going to say, when would
I don't think I'm going to retire. I hope.
Well, there's still people playing.
Yeah, there's still people playing who have been inducted.
So that's a negative
right?
ballot Hall of Famer, right? We don't have a balloting system in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, okay.
So it's
interesting.
We've all been playing longer than 5 years at least.
I don't know who makes those decisions per se. I know it's a lot of, you know, the older generation.
Yeah, my understanding of the Hall of Fame is it's a fellowship. So the members of the Hall of Fame, the members in the Hall of Fame get a vote.
Oh.
I don't know if that's actually true or not, but that's my understanding of how it works, is the members of the Hall of Fame each get a vote.
So the more Hall of Famers we interview, the better chance we have.
So do you think that the way that Hall of Fame is, you know, selected or chosen, should that change?
I think the fellowship model is a reasonable model.
Yeah, I think the people that get inducted deserve to be inducted.
Yeah, I've been rather pleased with each of the.
Let me elaborate. By that, do you think that more votes should be involved? Like, if a player has been playing for, let's say, you know.
Oh,
10 years or more, should their vote, you know, their input be consideration for whether or not the individual gets, you know, inducted?
That's a good question.
That's a really
just,
good question.
Just, yeah, just a thought. Like, because I've been, I mean, I'm not anywhere near there yet, although I've played longer than a decade. But let's say 20 years have gone by, and I've played this game, you know, and let's say, you know, 20 years I've played, you know, I know the players, I know the game.
Especially if there's constitutes... Hall of Famers that aren't watching the game anymore.
That's right, there's definitely Hall of Famers that are totally...
Yeah, so what constitutes, you know, a valid opinion to decide someone gets inducted or not?
Yeah, I think unimpeachably, if you're in the Hall of Fame, you get a vote. I think that's fair. But yeah,
agreed.
I mean, to your point, you know, it's the way the Hall of Fame works in like baseball, football, is it's voted on by the media, right? The beat reporters that follow the teams, and they're known to be highly knowledgeable of the game because it's their profession, it's what they do. We don't have professional media that follow it. However, we do have four members that I would consider Whirly Ball media at this point.
The three of us and Whirly Freak. Yeah, Gus. Yeah, we are the media.
So we
have an automatic vote. We should be.
Everyone else, yeah.
Yeah.
And a case could be made for Thomas Lee. Controversy. Yeah. So I don't know. It's a really interesting question, Steve. You know, maybe some, like, if you've been in the game for 10 years, you get, you know, a third of a vote. You've been in 20 years, you get a 2/3 of a vote. You've been in 30 years, you get a full vote. Yeah, I don't know. That's really interesting.
Yeah, it's a good topic of conversation. Like I said, controversy, right?
Yeah,
and not even really controversy, just something to be discussed and possibly changed in the future, especially since at some point, you know, the people who are making these decisions, I imagine at some point they will no longer be making those decisions. And like any sport, there needs to be progress and changes.
And if it is the fellowship model where only people in the hall continue to vote, then we also should look at the attrition of members in the hall, because you only get one new person a year. And so if we lose more than one Hall of Famer a year to going away from the sport or, you know, becoming not involved for whatever reason, then it's not sustainable if that's the case. Now, I may be wrong about the fellowship model. If I am, I hope someone please, you know, reach out and correct us on that. But that would be...
At some point we'll have an interview with somebody who happens to be in that, part of that process. Like, you know, eventually we want to get, you know, Clint Fisher on here, Sam Kim. You know, and actually, we never really thought about it. Otherwise, we probably would have asked James Gill or Brian Crosby, one of those individuals. Yeah, we'll definitely find out because, I'm sure that we're not the only ones who are curious about how exactly that works, how that pans out.
Yeah.
I'd be lying if I'd said that I have no desire, no, thoughts of, I'd love to be in the Hall of Fame one day. And if not for my Whirlyball play, then maybe we get recognized, like Mark said, for being the first Whirlyball podcast. That would be great.
Yeah, we'll see what kind of impact we can have with the sport. I think if the sport grows a lot, then we'll have more impact. The other piece that's really I think of that's worth considering is those in the Hall of Fame should get, you know, it's kind of their legacy that we're talking about changing the way of the way the voting changes. So they should definitely have a voice.
Oh yeah, absolutely. They're the pioneers, so they definitely should have a say on how it changes and or if it changes.
Or even how it goes.
With the flow. Like I said earlier, it's all about going with the flow, Mark.
That's right.
The whirly flow. I don't know what that means, but moving on. Was there anything else we wanted to touch on today? I mean, we talked about fantasy. We talked about do we cheat enough? We gave you the update on Whirly News, Breaking Balls, that Breaking new Balls segment. Mark, thank you. That was genius. It just came out of nowhere.
This just in, Breaking Balls.
And we're back.
Tonight, Steve is getting quicker on the button.
The only other conversation piece that I had was the Unlimited tournament.
Yes.
Controversy.
Well, I don't know if the Unlimited tournament's controversial yet.
Secrets.
It's not that either. No. Everyone knows about secret, the... Yeah.
Steve is just getting really
I'm glad you're loving the
dial
buttons.
Happy.
A lot of buttons on Steve.
Yeah. Oh, there'll be more added. Don't worry. It's going to be great.
But like, how do they have so much energy to keep on going during those Unlimited tournaments?
You mean after playing the A tournament?
Yeah. It seems like they need to have a certain...
The Unlimited tournament typically includes...
Steroids.
Steve's not picking up the
cue. No, I'm not. I'm sorry.
They need some kind of upper.
Get the cocaine!
Thanks.
I mean, is that what you were looking for?
Yeah.
I think that's what I'm sorry.
Well, as you know, guys, when we do this more and more often, I will be able to pick up on the cues more and more.
Yeah.
Unless actually, I mean.
This is where we talk about where the communication works better.
The silent communication. We're not even wearing masks. Yeah. We're literally talking.
Well, we're outside, and we got a 6-foot
distance. I even did like a bump on my nose.
I saw
it. Thank you.
I picked up on that, Mark.
Thanks.
Well, then maybe one of you two should be operating the mixer.
Got it. Okay. So, anyways, back to the Unlimited tournament.
Oh wait, that was not breaking.
And we're back. So there's been conversations about the unlimited tournament comes down to two teams always. It's always Michigan, Seattle.
The unlimited tournament starts that way.
Yeah, or it doesn't start that way. Recently, there's been a couple other teams that are trying to.
Nobody outside of Seattle or Michigan participates.
Okay. Oh, yeah. So it just becomes this thing where it's always Michigan and Seattle, and people are watching, and, you know, and it's still basically the A teams that are playing.
Effectively.
Plus minus one or two players that go on to it. But I've heard people talk about the possibility of what if we gave up the unlimited tournament to make maybe an all-star game, which some might argue is kind of the money tournament, but the money tournament also isn't the all-star game. It's just a group of people like that are willing to play a game.
Yeah, you know, in my mind, the unlimited tournament is really cool because it's still the best of Seattle and the best of Michigan. And in years where they had multiple A teams, Seattle's had multiple A teams for the past, well, for a while. And so when they do that, they make, you know, balanced A teams. They don't put all the rock stars on a single team. And so there is something interesting about, like, all right, well, play the best team. Can we? What is the best team that each center can put forward? But as you say, if Michigan's only putting up one A team, and if we're not including any other centers because they haven't won the A tournament yet, with the idea being like, well, if they can't win A, then they can't compete against the best. I think there's an important competition there, but it's a little funny. To me, an all-star game doesn't replace the unlimited tournament. It, I think, supplements it. I think it's a different thing. And it is kind of nice to be able to give, you know, let the players vote who are the best players in Whirly Ball.
Or and at then, least, like, during that tournament.
It should be during that tournament. Yeah. Ideally, it would be, you know.
Oh, yeah. It would still come down to, like,
it'd be the Sunday
LeBron
night
James
game.
Is always going to make it type of situation.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I mean, I don't know if LeBron can play Whirly Ball.
Oh, sorry. James Gill is always going to make the All-Star team.
But it would be really interesting to get, all right, everybody vote on everybody. Every single person. You pay your entry fee, you get a vote for the All-Star tournament. So if Texas, you know, if Michigan wanted to vote Timmy into the All-Star game, they could do it.
Yeah.
I think that would be great. And then, you know, you get the top 10 vote getters, and then you just, you know, you break them on down. Odds and evens are,
sort of
are
like,
the teams or something.
How Seattle does the MVP votes. So say, like, we did that. Timmy would have been on an all-star team, and he would have been able to play with different.
Oh, are you talking
calibers.
About doing an all-star team of each division?
Yeah, just like, kind of like a so put like, together, like.
Because there would because there are a couple different ways that you could do it. One is you vote for the top 10 people in all of Whirly Ball, and you see who gets in there, and you get, you know, a game together. And then another one is who are the top 10 in each division.
Yeah, see, I think if it was each division, it would just be too long.
I think so, too.
So if you took, like, the top 10 players, everyone votes, whoever their top 10 players are, and then it just kind of breaks down to whoever has the most votes within those 10. Yeah. Like, and then, you know, just you kind of do a bracket of one and two are different teams, you know, three, four, whatever, or you know, skipping around, and then just make two teams out of those 20 or those 10 people.
Yeah, that would be so interesting because, you know, by votes, you might not get a goalie up in the top 10 ever, right?
And then someone has to kind of...
Or they got to figure it out.
Yeah.
So I may be a little bit...
Yeah, we didn't ask for your opinion, Steve.
No, it is... So if you're voting for... How do we figure... Or how is there not a potential overlap of votes?
What do you mean?
So if everybody...
Gets one vote.
One vote for a certain amount of players or one player. Like I said, I mean, there's something I'm obviously missing. But yet, let's say everybody votes for James Gill. Then it's James Gill against James
like
Gill.
Everyone votes 10 people.
Yeah, that's probably... Or what you could do is, you know, you define...
Or at least five people or something.
Yeah, at least five. You define... Yeah, pick your five best team. Who is your best team of five? And then
the top 10.
That's probably the best way to do it. Because then you'll get a little bit more spread. And then you'll pick and you can have, you know, two defensive players and three offensive players if you want. And then from that, you probably have sufficient.
And you know,
is it one from each center then, or
no? It's the top vote getters.
Yeah, it's like an all-star game. It's not necessarily like
purely
know,
the top vote getters. Yeah.
And you know, and if there was a prize to go with that, then like,
so is there a way that you would that it would not be five Michigan versus five Seattle, or is it mixed?
The way I envision it is if it were a simple vote, and let's say it's the you know, you pick your top five. Every time your name shows up there, you get a point.
Yep.
And then you rank the person. You stack rank everybody with you know, by points. And you take the top 10, and you take the evens, and you put them on one team, and the odds, and you put them on another team.
Yeah.
It is unlikely that that will work out to be a Seattle versus Michigan team.
And, you know, there's a good possibility that maybe people just don't want to see Seattle and Michigan, and they just don't vote for that, you know? Granted, yeah, sure. they are the probable better players and stuff, but...
Well, it's going to be tough because Seattle and Michigan are going to have more
But at least,
voters.
There's going to be people that are like, you know, like... Ola stepped up this tournament, and like he deserves a play up in that range.
That's right.
Like,
yeah.
Are we going to be doing mail-in ballots?
Just do it at the center, like. Sure.
Yeah.
Do we have to worry about voter fraud?
You know, you should probably. I would encourage anybody who's voting for me to vote twice.
I mean, if you register and you go and you get your register stuff, it should come with a ballot.
Yeah,
with your name.
It's very important that you bring ID to the tournament.
Yeah, for sure.
And also arrest record, because we have to, you know, be discerning.
Also, if there was a prize where, like, your team won, then, like, you won an all-star game within Nationals as well. Like, and for the fact that you were put on the all-star game.
Yeah, it would be nice if we could figure out some kind of prize. But to be honest, just being voted into
voted
it.
As
and
a,
then,
like, yeah, you're voted by your peers to play in this all-star game. Like, that's pretty rad.
That's pretty rad. That's a pretty rad thing. And then, you know, the competition, it should mean something, but it'd be, I don't know. You know, the thing that's tough about it, because I agree with you, it should be the All-Stars of that tournament. It shouldn't be preconceived, you know, notions of how someone will perform.
Yeah.
It makes it tough because now we're throwing a game at the end of the tournament. So it's like, you know, the Sunday night All-Star game is a little bit, you know, where the banquet's supposed to happen. Logistically, it's a little tough, but we'd have to figure it out. But I do like the idea of doing it then. You know, everyone's just super pooped emotionally, physically. They're just done.
And you just got to give the rest of you to.
And then, you know what? It's a little exhibition game. It's for fun. Nobody needs to, you know, the competition for it won't be intense. It won't be like the Unlimited tournament. The competition level is extreme. The All-Star game, competition level doesn't need to be extreme. It's an exhibition.
Or instead of an All-Star game, we could have a talent show.
Well, yeah, I mean, so you think of the NHL All-Star break or the NBA All-Star break, right, where you have the skills games.
I've talked about this many times.
And so, you know, I wouldn't be, so, you know, if
skill
we took,
competition?
If you took the All-Star game and made it, you know, some sort of like, all right, well, if you get a shot from this weld, it's worth 10 points. If you, you know, whatever. This guy's allowed to stand up in his car.
So what if the Unlimited tournament happened on Wednesday instead of a money tournament, and the All-Star game took place during when the Unlimited tournament would normally go?
Yeah, that would probably be okay. The All-Star game would be...
Or vice versa.
Generally fewer games than the Unlimited tournament.
Well, someone
I couldn't do vice versa because you wouldn't be able to vote the All-Stars first. So that's the only reason.
Well, and some would argue that they haven't had enough playing time getting that mindset or, you know, get their shot down or...
But,
you know,
like, when you watch the money tournament, a lot of times it's just people just kind of fucking around. Yeah, they get to drive the car or something. But, like, you have how many seeding games? Seeding games aren't, like...
But the money tournament is, you know, the thing that's nice about the money tournament is twofold. One, and I know that we were talking about changing this, is the lower players play with upper players, which is good for the upper players to build those camaraderies, build those relationships. So the lower players play with the upper players, which, you know, we talked about doing the, you know, the lower player-centric one and the upper player-centric one, and I think that would also work because of the second reason why the money tournament is so good, which is you get to play with players from other centers, and you build those relationships, you know, on the court, which is super good. You know, it does what the Invitational does, but not everybody can make it to the Invitational, and so it does help build those camaraderie. So I you know, it's tough. I know what I'm proposing. What I'm being a proponent of is just more, more.
Exactly.
We're gonna
add. Let's do more Whirly Ball.
And it's tough. We've got to figure out logistically how to make it work. Yeah.
Well, and would their names get put on the trophy like they would Unlimited? Would it be the all-star team.
So there would have to be a new trophy. They would have to, if they got rid of Unlimited, retire the Unlimited trophy.
Or
to change it.
You make the Whirly Ball Cup was originally the A trophy.
Oh, true.
The Unlimited Cup was originally the A trophy until, as I understand it, Michigan won it. And then there was controversy about... There was controversy about, yeah, they won it, but they didn't beat the best Seattle team. So let's have the best Michigan team play the best Seattle team to see who the real champion is. And that's controversial because it happened after the fact. It would be fine if it happened before the fact. But
I mean, I think it would also be cool just to, like, continue to add on to that trophy and make it huge and whatever, but...
Yeah, and I do, I mean, there is something to be said where, like, that trophy, the names on that trophy, those are the best teams to play, those are the best Whirly Ball players that year.
Yep.
Period.
And the one thing that's never mentioned
there's controversy
regarding any change is that it doesn't have to be permanent.
Right.
Why not? We can try something.
We can try it.
It never hurts to try, and if it turns out to be too much, nobody's into it or interested, we can always revert back to Unlimited.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, again, the unlimited competitors would have to, on some level, provide some consensus for not doing an Unlimited tournament, which, at the moment, I don't know how much consensus there would be to switch that for... You know, an all-star type exhibition, non-competitive. Because an all-star game champion doesn't make sense to me to go on the Unlimited Cup.
Yeah, for sure. It's a different species.
It's a different species. It's a good way to say it.
That's why it's like, just retire that cup for a moment and then just start a new one.
All of the things. More.
Yep. More trophies. More shinies.
We'll definitely see what the future holds in that regard.
All right.
Well, and I mean, it'll be interesting to see who we need to talk to see if we can enact those changes. I'm sure Whirly Ball Committee would be involved and a number of players.
Yeah, I mean, the Whirly Ball Committee, there's another subcommittee, right? The Whirly Ball Legacy Committee, the Hall of Fame Committee, the Unlimited, you know, committee. I think all those things are, to me, they kind of group under the legacy.
The committees.
That's four subcommittees we've talked about. Man, that's a lot of work.
And who knows, by the time that, you know, summer ends, perhaps there'll be another committee
added. Start a committee.
Yeah. The which committee?
We'll start the Whirly Ball Podcast Committee.
Ooh. Yeah.
Oh, there could be no other podcast of Whirly Ball.
We get franchise rights.
Yep.
CCR.
We're first.
Without the express written consent of Major League Baseball.
Subsequent.
May apply. We are first ballot Hall of Famers in the Whirly Ball Podcast Committee.
Yeah, as soon as we figure out how ballots work.
Yeah.
Mail in.
The three of us have to mail each other.
Oh, God, I hope they voted for me.
Hey, Mark and Noah got in. Sweet.
Who's Trevor?
This is voter fraud. God damn it. I demand a recount. I think we've touched on all topics that we were hoping to touch on today, right?
Yeah, miss you, Whirly Ball. Miss you.
Yeah, absolutely. We miss all of you. I mean, miss the game, miss talking to people and catching up on, you know, just general how your life's going, how you doing. I mean, I know Noah, job's going well for you, it sounds like. You know, you're doing some remote stuff here and there, and you are going into work still. You're still getting on those airliners, right?
Yeah, we're getting on our test planes, which is, it's not like a commercial flight. It's a very controlled environment. But, been doing a fair amount of test flying, and it's a great airplane.
Mark, you're still cutting meat? Still going good?
I killed someone.
Still have your 30... And you're still employed. Good for you.
Yep. Yeah. He was delicious.
I was going to say, I guess.
I mean, I don't know, but I mean, there's probably plenty of people in Mount Lake Terrace that know.
And I'm still working at the hospital, you know, still going in Monday through Friday.
Going in?
Yeah, I'm still going in. And although a number of people have been working remotely, I'm super jealous. Although apparently we don't have that capability because we use a phone queue, which I guess you cannot do remotely according to telecom. I think it's kind of BS. myself. I don't think they want to put the effort into trying figuring it out, but
I don't know that much about telephones, but the little I do know is that they can really only be used remotely.
Yeah. See, and that's why I was kind of like, when I first had asked about the potential idea of working remotely and we were fed that line, I kind of had the look that you have right now of severe confusion.
Yeah. You have to be, I guess you have to be near the switchboard operator that you guys are probably
apparently, using. Yeah. You know, it's just any more than 50 feet and beyond, then you're fucked.
Yeah, telephones don't work at long distance.
Yeah.
No, they're the worst.
We have to revert back to cups and strings. Yeah. I don't know. But other than that, yeah, the three of us are doing well. Hopefully everybody out there is doing all right. And you find your way back on the whirly ball court sooner rather than later. And if you don't, because you know you're afraid for your health and safety, we totally respect and understand that. And if you're needing some sort of whirly ball fix and ideology, listen to the show, you know. We talk about it all here.
Yeah.
And join us on the Zoom meetings on Wednesdays.
Yeah.
Central.
Yeah, if you're looking for some, you know, I know in these stay-at-home times, there have been times where I've needed some interaction to keep my mind straight.
And by interaction, you mean you just watch via YouTube while Mark and I talk. And
then I'll text you guys.
Yeah, and you just text us during the show. Like, no, that was the Cheryl episode. Thanks, Noah. Yeah,
but at least we know he's watching.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll get you back.
That's why he's a future Hall of Famer.
Future.
Because he texts us during the Zoom meetings.
That's right.
For the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, we're talking about the Hall of Fame talk. Yeah, I have aspirations doing the Hall of Fame thing, too. First, I'd like to make an A-team.
Wait, aspirations?
Aspirations of greatness.
Perspiration of happiness.
Not perspirations? Yeah. All right, just checking.
Wrong button.
Oh, yeah, and Driscoll. Driscoll was another Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
You got any wood for Driscoll? Give it to him.
That is a whirly ball a rule, if you will. If you got any wood for Driscoll, make sure
give it to him.
Give it to him. Yes.
Yeah. No, I mean, you got to give it to him.
Yep. Driscoll, if you're listening, we've got wood for you.
We're going to give it to you.
Yeah. Next time we see you in Michigan, hopefully summer 2021. That's the hope. And
or if Texas does an invitational prior.
Driscoll, get your ass out there.
What are we going to do with all this wood?
Give it to Driscoll.
Yeah, give it to Driscoll. Come on. We went over that.
He's got to show up.
True. He's too busy, like, you know, driving around on a little trolley at work or whatever it is, or a scooter. Yeah. Anyways, good times, guys. Glad that we can fill everybody in with what's going on. And thanks for listening to our show, What in the World Podcast. Make sure you download and subscribe. Like us on the Facebooks. If you have the Facebooks, I don't know. You know, it just depends on whether or not you are social media savvy. I don't know. Noah, are you going to get on that shit anytime soon?
I'm sorry, the what now?
The Facebooks.
I'm not familiar.
The MyFace.
Yeah, I don't.
The Instagrams.
I've Instagrammed.
You'll one day get on the Facebook.
The what now?
Wink.
Well, in the meantime, don't let those whirly balls hit in the face. Peace.
Love you.